Thank you for staying with KHSU on your Tuesday, June 28th, 2016. I'm Wendy Butler, and this is Art Waves. It's challenging enough for anyone to establish a true sense of their own place in the world. How important is it to have functioning eyes? How about the space you inhabit? How does this define who you are? My guest today says that her art has been influenced by her suffering from a physical malady and a resulting decision that she made to extend her art exhibits and art making into a very new setting. Newfield, New York resident Tracy Ziegler's exhibition States of Waiting is currently at the Morris Graves Museum of Art in Eureka. Her bronze sculptures and paintings will be on display until July 31st. She will travel to Eureka to give an art talk at the museum this Sunday, July 3rd at 2 p.m. And today, she joins me by phone from her New York home. Even though you've been exhibiting for 25 years in various galleries throughout the United States and Canada, 6 years ago, you began seeking a different audience and began exhibiting your work in high security prisons. Well, that would not be the first thing one would think of that an artist would decide to do in terms of connecting with a different audience. So I wanted you to talk about why, how this decision was made.
Well, that's interesting because I would like wonder, well, why wouldn't that be the first thing an artist thinks of? I got involved exhibiting in prisons on many different levels. And so to say one reason, I mean, I can say one reason now, and then on my talk on Sunday, I can come up with another reason. One of the things is that as a landscape painter, now I have been doing landscapes before the birds since I was in art school. And doing landscape, you become very connected to space and how you create space and what's it all about. But I really didn't understand the dimension of space until I developed Graves' disease of the eyes. And I don't know if you know anything about Graves' disease.
Please explain if you would.
It's a thyroid disease. It's an anti-immune disease, usually affecting your thyroid, but also affecting your eyes. Sometimes it can lead to blindness. Sometimes it can do a whole host of problems. What it did to me is gave me severe double vision. And seeing the world in double had an impact upon me. I mean, you know, of course, you know, if you go to a party, had too much drink, you're going to do it. But to constantly see the world double with Graves' disease, it sort of threw my understanding about space totally out the window. Suddenly, two things, and I remember driving into Baltimore, and I got a severe, that's when it started, I got severe double vision, and I was about to go into the Baltimore Tunnel, driving a stick shift, so I couldn't really cover over one eye, and it was like, well, where's the tunnel? Which one is the real tunnel? You know, is it my right eye or is it my left eye? And then suddenly it was like, well, they're both there. It isn't like, you know, I'm going to say the right eye is wrong and the left eye is right. They're both there. And so what that meant to me, I mean, I didn't know what it meant to, but it's like everything I knew about space suddenly was turned upside down. Suddenly that organized sense of space of, you know, one thing can occupy one's position in space, and that's it, no longer was relevant to me. So I was beginning to look about the personal nature of space, that you know, if I'm a runner, I know the first mile of a race is qualitatively different than the last mile. I know that if I had to run 5 miles down the road for help, I could do it. But if I was in a wheelchair, it could be like a death sentence. And so I started thinking about how space kind of, it was no longer me in a space, but me of a space, and how that really came to define everything about me. You know, to some degree, time defines you, too. And so thinking about, well, what is a space that totally defines you 24 hours a day, 24/7? It was the prison. And so then I started sort of like seeing the prison as a different kind of thing. It was like, it's not just a place that you contain people, but it became of the person. So that was one of the things. And so, you know, just this relationship as a landscape painter. The other thing is that I did start drawing. I went into I was taking a walk on the University of Cornell University campus, and I walked into this atrium, and it had maybe 200 glass birds in the atrium. And this site just totally blew me away to see this encasement of birds. And I never looked at a bird before in my life. And actually, you know, I don't really look at birds that much. I'm not into the science in it. You know, I don't go bird watching or anything. But there was something about the birds that were displaced really fascinated me.
Displaced?
Displaced, because they were in these, it was their silence. It was their immobility. If the birds had been living, I don't think I would have thought anything about it. And it came to mind. What came to mind when I saw these birds is the poem by Rilke that said, that begins, "Like birds who get used to walking, lose the great sense of the heights above." You know. And so I started drawing these birds with no any kind of like sense of what I wanted to do with them. It was just this exploration through drawing that had no significance. And I really liked that, you know, because as an artist, you're sort of always on this treadmill to, you know, and particularly if you're a working artist who exhibits a lot, you know, you're always on to your next show, your next show, your next show. So for me, it was just a period where it was like total downtime. It was like playing in the sandbox and, well, let's just explore this. And who knows what's going to become of it. And if nothing becomes of it, I just have a great time doing this. And so they did lead to working, incorporating birds into my imagery.
Mm-hmm.
And simultaneously, and I think that artists don't work on a linear basis, so I can't say, well, I did this, and therefore I did that, that art is a recurrent kind of thing. It deals in a cyclical time. So all I know is I started drawing these birds, and the next thing you know, I'm in prison.
Let's fill this gap in just a little bit. Where did you want to exhibit first in terms of a high-security prison?
Care. Anybody would take me. I didn't care. Before I went to art school, I have a degree in social work, and I used to work in the projects in Philadelphia.
Okay.
And I was a family therapist. Now, I was not, I wrote a letter. I wrote a letter to a bunch of prisons. I wrote to them, iconic prisons, backwater prisons, anybody who would take me.
Uh-huh.
And having a training as a family therapist, I kissed that goodbye, never looked back, said, thank goodness, I never recognized a healthy relationship in my life, and I probably never will. And so when I wrote my letter, I didn't put it into any language that would be understandable to a warden.
What did you say?
I said, I just wanted to have an art show in your prison.
Well, who was the first taker?
Well, the first taker, I have to be careful because you know, in order for us to specifically name prisons, I have to get everybody to sign off on it, you know.
Oh, okay.
You would have like 6 months before you could talk to me.
Okay.
But, you know, we can talk general, like somewhere in North America, no, somewhere in New England, you know, someone. But actually, the first letter that I got, part of this is going to be part of my talk on Sunday, but the first letter I got was from the Supermax in Florida. And it was really kind of embarrassing because I never told my husband I was doing this. I thought it was like the stupidest thing ever for anyone to do. And so I was like hiding in my studio writing these letters. and I sent them out. And then this one time, this warden of the Supermax of Florida State Penitentiary sent me this letter. I wasn't home. So, of course, my husband wanted to know why was the warden of the Supermax writing me a letter. And so he scanned it and he sent it to me. Of course, I was embarrassed. But once I start reading the letter, my embarrassment totally went away because it was such a chilling letter. It was like, you know, not only are my heinous inmates never gone to see your art, they don't really see the light of day. And, you know, the first thing I thought of it was the horses in the novel by Zola, Germinal. Did you read that? You know, they send the horses down the mine. The horses never see day again. And so I had this, and I thought, oh, my God, what's going on? You know, then I had other, you know. Then I got, out of my batch of letters that I sent out, I got 6 favorable responses.
Tracy Ziegler. Her exhibit, States of Waiting, is on display at the Morris Graves Museum of Art in Eureka. I'm Wendy Butler, and you've got Art Waves on KHSU. So you have shown in, is it only high-security prisons, or what about community jails?
No, just high-security prisons.
Okay,
I thought if we're going to do this, let's do it extreme. You know, just go for, you know, just go for the most extreme and then work your way back. So.
Well, going from what that warden had said to you or had written to you, one of my questions for you is whether you've received feedback from anybody in any one of these prison populations about the art.
Yes, I have. And that was important to me. Other, you know, people would say, well, why don't you do like a survey of the prisons? You know, the typical like an academic kind of thing. And I'm like, you know, what are they going to say? I'm going to say, you know, do you like my artwork? And they're going to say, yeah, I love it, and get me out of here, you know. So I thought that the only way I could have an authentic conversation was to go into prisons and teach art at the places where that, you know, like if you accepted my artwork, then I'll come and teach at your prison kind of thing. And so I did that, and it was really interesting because they never asked people specifically what did they think about my artwork. And I have one prison in New England that I totally, you know, I have 50 large paintings there. And, you know, every time, I would have prisoners coming up to me saying, every time I turn around, I see one of your paintings. And I'm like, oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to junk up your prison with my paintings.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I like to think that, oh, isn't that nice? I gave my paintings to a prison. That's a really nice thing to do. But it's not really that nice a thing to do in a way, because I'm deciding that, you know, I'm going to put my paintings here. And I was actually in a Supermax. It was same state, but this guy had been in this other prison.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he did something, and he got bumped up the, you know, he went from Max to the Supermax.
Mm-hmm.
And I was teaching in the Supermax, and he said, you know, yeah, I was there when, you know, the paintings are still there, so, you know, they've been there for 6 years. I was there when your paintings came into the prison, and personally, I thought I wasn't really sure I wanted to wake up every morning looking at your paintings. And then he goes, but every time I look at them, I see something different. So I said, well, you might not like my paintings, but how about living your life in a place that's the same every day, and you get to see something different? Does that have any, you know, does that have any significance? And then other people, like, I taught a class not too long ago, and a person in my class, I said, oh, you put that, those are your paintings? And I said, yeah, they're my paintings. He goes, wow, I've been sitting in A block thinking, this is the most bleakest place in the entire world. What the hell are those paintings doing here?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and he liked it. But then the guy next to him in my class said, well, I really got me angry because why did you get to hang your work here and not me? You know, so it goes like that.
Well, yeah, what about that? Teaching art to prisoners. Now, did you teach art, or have you taught art before you taught this particular population? Did you teach art in...
No,
I
didn't want to teach art. I was raising probably a privileged white kid. I don't really want to be teaching them, you know?
But so you decided, so not only did you make a decision to show your work in high security prisons, then you made a decision to be a teacher specifically to teach prisoners.
Yes.
Art.
Yes.
Well,
yes, I did.
Dale, tell a little bit about that experience.
Well, that has really, I mean, my understanding of art has grown so much in the experience, because what I learned about teaching art, well, one thing is that I wanted to teach art in the same way that I would teach anybody else. Just like I wanted to show my art in prison, just like I wanted to show it in a gallery. You know, I'm not trying to do therapy with the people that come into the gallery. And that was the same thing. So I really wanted to, I want to teach drawing just like I teach anybody else. And so I'm not really, you know, as I tell the guys, you know, I'm not your therapist. You know, I don't, you know, I'm not your warden. I'm not your therapist. And it was actually a shock to begin with, because I didn't realize that there was such a, I go into a prison. I should realize this, but I didn't realize that there was like basic five influences of art in prison, which was Bob Ross. Bob Ross is the godfather of art in prison. Playboy magazines, photographs of loved ones, tattoos, and cartoons. And this was it. And it, to me, it was the copying of photographs was just what everybody did. And I would have to say, listen, you're already an inmate. Now you're a double inmate to a photograph. And so one of the things that I wanted to do in drawing and teaching drawing was not so much teach people how to make pretty pictures and not to do therapy with them, but rather to teach people to see the world through their own eyes, which is what I learned in art school. I mean, I went to social work school beforehand, but I didn't see the world until through my own eyes until I went to art school. And so that's what I'm trying to do. How do you get out of that repetitive expectation of what someone wants you to, how someone wants you to see the world? And you do that by looking. And instead of seeing the world as an assortment of concepts, you know, this is a ball, this is just a chair, begin to see the world in terms of visual relationships. And so instead, you know, I had one prisoner who said, you know, my mantra to going to bed tonight is, it's not an apple, it's an opportunity for light and shadow. And yeah, that's what it is. You know, you start drawing. That's what you learn from drawing. Actually, that's what I learned from an old friend who was a psychologist, and she said, oh, I took a drawing class, and suddenly the world looked so different to me because it's all about light and shadow, and it's all about here and there and texture and color. I mean, you know, we own each of our colors because perception of color is so unique. And then it always changes. Color, the color red is never stable. It's always in relationship to what it's with. You know, it's going to look different against, you know, red against white is dark and red against black is light. So it's that kind of thing that I'm asking people to look at in prison. Of course, it's kind of hard because what I'm doing in a maximum security prison is asking people to look at the world instead of what we think we're trying to do in prison, which is, you know, look at yourself and redeem yourself and tell us what's wrong with you and do your mea culpas. And I'm saying, no, look at the world, and think about all the garbage that has been shoved down your throat, because it has been shoved down your throat. You know, just like I shoved things down my son's throat. You know, we do it. That's what we do. So that's my, you know, that's my spiel on drawing.
Tracy Ziegler, on the phone, from Newfield, New York. The artist is exhibiting her bronze sculptures and paintings at the Morris Graves Museum of Art until July 31st. She'll give an art talk at the museum this Sunday at 2 p.m. And this is Art Waves on KHSU. I'm Wendy Butler.
It's sort of interesting because my paintings and my monoprints were always of places, interiors, and landscapes where there was no people. And people were like, well, why don't you ever have people in your places? And I'm like, well, people are intrusive. You know, if you put a person in your landscape, you know, it becomes a landscape about that person. So the birds are kind of opposite because the landscapes were space without people, and the birds are creatures basically without space.
And so the way that your work with prisons is I guess, translating into your own art now is how? Is imagery? And imagery from basically being with these people and seeing these environments.
Yeah. You know, I do cages. I have birds on top of cages.
Mm-hmm.
I don't, you know, that's kind of direct blank, I guess, bars. I just let it go. I just don't really sort of think about how it makes, because one of the things that I never want to do is I never want to do a show saying, oh, this is prison, you know, I don't like exploiting my experience or exploiting the prison experience and say, oh, I'm going to have a show about this, because I think that's wrong. I did that once. I had this show, anonymous show, in Philadelphia at my gallery there, and it was basically, because one of the first things that I learned going into prison was people were saying, oh, that's not bad for an inmate. I'm like, well, why do you think, you know, whatever. And so I thought, and actually the first prisoner I ever met in this backwater prison was a man who got an MFA from the same school that I went to, but I didn't know him until he was a prisoner. And I said, Fred, do you think anybody is ever going to recognize you as an artist outside of being a prison artist? And he said, no. So I had the show, and I invited some well-known East Coast artist and the prisoners, and everybody had to make something in a 6-inch circle. And I framed them, and they had a front and a back, so somebody did the front, somebody did the back. I hung them from bars, and the question was of the audience, can you look at this artwork without asking the whodunit question? And, you know, I really was sort of disappointed in, you know, it's like, oh, you know, because everybody was fixated on, oh, this is prison work, and isn't that nice, and I'm so glad you're helping these prisoners. And I thought, well, this doesn't make sense. I get my name on the show, and then I get these, you know, like, pat on the back for doing a nice thing, and I said, I'm never going to do this again. you know, big deal for having that show. And I take issue with, I mean, I think you have to show work about prison, but you have to question whether, who's it for? Who's it for? Is it for your career? Is it for this? And so I kind of just don't really bring the prison in a overt way into my work. I just let it sort of get under my skin.
Well, it's been a pleasure speaking with you, and very, said in my email, you know, currently I am teaching, I'm not teaching art, I'm teaching English and language arts.
Yeah.
And it's not a maximum security. It's our county jail, our county correctional facility. But there are so many things that you've just said that I'm just nodding and I'm going, yeah, I get it. I get what you mean.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I agree.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, as a social activist, my biggest thing is that I want as many people to go into prison as possible. I think everybody from every household should, like, do something in prison as an engagement. You know, and mm-hmm. I think that if everybody went into prison and saw the experience and met and just got engaged with who we reject, prisons would not exist how they are.
Tracy Ziegler, States of Waiting, at the Morris Graves Museum of Art, 636 F Street, Eureka, to July 31st. She'll be in town to give an art talk this Sunday, July 3rd at 2 p.m. at the museum. Thank you for listening. Art Waves is a production of KHSU, located at Humboldt State University. I'm Wendy Butler, and I produce, engineer, and host this program. Art Waves, broadcast every Tuesday at 1:30 p.m. and available anytime online at khsu.org.